Good afternoon. My name is Kirk, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I'd like to welcome everyone to the Real Life Advocacy Practitioner Sharing Session 1 for the Federation of Ontario Public Libraries conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. If you'd like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you, Mr. Stephen Abram. You may begin your conference.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's wonderful to engage you in our influencing program. We've got a series of webinars, and the first one came off without a hitch and went quite well, I think. We had great attendance. And the second one's coming up on October 25th, part two with Cheryl Sandstrom on the research underpinnings of how to influence. And of course, we do want to influence. We are nonpartisan, but we are very biased to be in favor of the role public libraries play in Ontario and society at large. So October 25th is part two. And then we've got a series of teleconferences today with Sam Coughlin, and on November 4th with Ken Roberts. We've been mixing it up to have conversations and webinar training. Today I'm hoping that you've brought questions with you and that you'll do your thing to have Kirk introduce you and give your question on the call, because he can unmute you and pull you in, and we can have some engagement, and I'm looking forward to that. Today, we've got Sam Coughlin, and Sam probably needs no introduction. He's a past president of the Ontario Library Association. He's retired now, and I've asked a couple of retired librarians to participate in these teleconferences. Sam's last day of work was the summer solstice this year, he says, and because I believe when people are retired, they don't have to deal with the politics of their employer. We start to get recently retired people to talk about what they've learned in as open a fashion as they feel comfortable with. Sam grew up in what is now Thunder Bay, and he's got a law degree from the University of Windsor and an MLS from the University of Western Ontario. He was CEO of Stratford Public Library for 9 years, and was chief librarian at Oxford County Library for 16 years, where he became involved in rural community development. He also worked in the Lake Erie Regional Library System and for OLS TEMS before it became amalgamated into SOLS, Southern Ontario Library Service. He's a strong proponent of public libraries, about how they contribute to community development, especially in rural communities and small towns. So he's had quite a bit of community involvement. He's been a member of the Federation of Ontario Public Libraries Advocacy Task Force. He's a board member of Municipal Cultural Planning, Inc. He's been a board member of Knowledge Ontario and of the Perth Community Futures Development Corporation. The way this call is going to go, and of course, welcome, Sam.
Hi.
The way this call is going to go is I've got a couple of conversation starters with Sam. And we're going to try and talk for 20, 25 minutes. And then I can ask more questions, or we can take your questions. Better to take your questions, because you've got a resource online who's intelligent, experienced, and has a good perspective that I think the voice of experience is what I wanted to capture in these calls. And so, Sam, building trust, I think, is really important as we try and influence civil servants, municipal politicians, donors, our communities. What do you think are the components of a CEO and of library staff in building trust with their funders and their supporters?
Well, the building trust, when you said you were going to raise that question, the first thing that popped to my mind was, well, just be yourself. What else can you do? That's not enough, but it's a key component of building trust. Don't try to be somebody you're not.
So what does that look like?
Well, the other part is really active listening and making sure that you are listening to the people whom you are trying to influence, and as I say, active listening, talking back so that they understand that you're hearing them, and in doing so, you're establishing a common language. And I think, you know, when you have a common language, that starts to be evidence that you are building trust. When you can actually talk to people and they listen and you feel as though you are somehow or another learning what their agenda is so that you can align your agenda with theirs.
So you think having aligning the agendas with their agenda is a good one? Like we saw that with We Talk's children's storytelling, and most of us use the words that that the government was using early years as a word that aligned our stuff with their agenda. Is that like what you mean?
Yeah, like I did a lot of work in Oxford with the federal government, and there were a couple people with the Fed who you know, were really keen to help libraries, but they kept on cautioning me because I'd get so passionate and talk about, you know, I'd look at any problem and I'd think, oh, well, libraries are the solution. And they said, they cautioned me not to be so always about libraries. Talk about the problems that they're trying to solve. Don't talk about the solution that I'm bringing to the table. And I mean, it's a subtle difference because, you know, we do want to get the conversation to libraries, but learning their language and develop and talking to them about what's important to them, that's how we build trust.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting because I know that when we review the speech from the throne, the federal one's coming up in a couple of weeks, and there'll be an Ontario one, we get clues as to the words about what their agenda is.
Yeah, yeah. And it's it's tempting to sort of want to dismiss that as just sort of looking for buzzwords and engaging in shifting our direction. So it's important not to do that, to not lose what's important to us, but it's a matter of just couching it in the language that they'll understand.
Yeah, I think that's one of the diseases, and I suffer from it, is using the jargon of librarianship.
Don't we all?
And so we talk about reference, which is something you do when you're trying to hire an employee, get their references, or we talk about cataloging and when we really mean organization. And stuff like that.
And what's an acquisition?
Yeah. And so if we avoid the jargon and use their language or at least share a language with them where we're speaking a common language, even though we have our own, it starts to build trust.
Yeah.
I know last week when we were talking to Cheryl, her research was showing that likability was one of the three key factors. And that one strategy for likability is that they need to see you face-to-face more often after someone's seen you a few times. I don't know, you stop becoming the alien and you start becoming the committed person.
Yeah, there's more likelihood there'll be liking going on.
Yeah.
You can't make somebody like you. You just can't, because the key thing is to be yourself. And if there's somebody who doesn't like tall guys who always tell bad puns, then you know you're out of luck.
Well, I'm tall, but I don't do puns.
I do.
Yeah, I know. But it makes you likable. Like you said, they get to know a person.
Yeah.
And so as you're being likable is not enough. So you look at building credibility. Like when you sit there, like I know one librarian aligned their library with the logistics strategy of their city and got $52 million to rebuild a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
And part of it was not talking about new buildings, but talking about economic infrastructure and using the words of the people. But part of it was, where did he get credibility from that he knew about being a community-centric or community economic or social or cultural lever? What have you done? What gives you credibility when you're talking to these folks?
Well, and this may sound a bit like a bit of a diversion, but one of the things that I wrestled with and I was thinking about this conversation was the realizing that there's going to be a fair number of people on the call who aren't chief librarians.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they're like, if anybody was paying attention when you were telling my my ancient history, I've been a chief librarian for almost forever, and I've hardly ever worked on a front desk. So I asked a couple.
So you have no front desk credibility.
Well, but that's all right, because yeah, my credibility comes from the library as a whole, and I wonder when I say to people, you know, when I say to the library staff, you know, we have to build credibility in the community. They wonder, well, how do I do that? I'm busy checking out books all the time or doing cataloging, et cetera. Well, the sum total of what they do, the personal interventions that they make in people's lives, the way they help people, that all cumulatively builds up incredible credibility in the community, and it's that I tend to think of it more as affection than credibility, but credibility is a big part of it. So my credibility in the communities, my personal credibility, I'll talk about that in a minute, but the important credibility is that because I'm the spokesperson for the library, because the library is doing such a good job in touching the lives of so many people, when the people I'm talking to realize that, it increases our credibility immensely. Personal credibility, I'll give a negative example. I've got a bad memory for numbers, and I also tend to be a bit dyslexic at times. So sometimes I've been parts of meetings where people have asked me, or in situations where people have asked me, you know, a question about a number relating to the library, and when I had to say, well, I'm not great at numbers, so don't take this at face value, I feel a bit abashed, like, you know, am I somehow letting the library down by doing that? But on the other hand, I think it would be so much worse if I pretended to be confident and referred to it, you know, just threw a number out, the number that I thought was right, and found out later that it was horribly wrong. So the credibility comes with that constant exposure, I think.
So you mentioned the CEO's role. Do you think everyone in the library can be influential to reposition the library with our communities?
Yeah.
What's the role of others?
Yeah, and the, like, I think the most important role is the people who are involved in direct interaction with the public in terms of you know, making a difference in individuals' lives and helping, just by helping them. You know, they could do more as the library develops its strategy and figures out what its organizational message is. And if the frontline staff buy into that and pass that along, that's important too. I mean, that will help a lot. But the main thing is doing the best at what they do to help an individual. There's way more that they can do, but this is one of those areas where I'm always a little bit cautious because of getting into people's relationships outside the library.
Mm-hmm.
And as an employer, you have no claim on their activity or time. You can't tell them what to do or what not to do. But working in a library is so much a matter of vocation. It's to so many of us. If we take that to the community and be an effective ambassador for the library at parties and, you know, in the lineup at the supermarket, those kind of things really contribute to the library's credibility.
I've seen libraries do this quite well, where they have discussions with the staff about empowering them to take messages to the barbecues, the baseball diamond, the sporting events.
Yeah, and I think the key word is empowering, because we can't tell them to.
No.
But
it's certainly in their own self-interest.
Yeah, and most of the people in the library community want to,
mm-hmm.
because we care so much.
Yeah, our people do care. That's where they get some of their credibility from, right?
Because exactly. Yeah. Yeah, maybe we should call it careability.
Yeah, we can do the Care Bear thing. But okay, so part of it is, when you're going in as a CEO and speaking for the library, in many ways you can be wrapped as being self-interested. Or when librarians go, like, you know, when the union or various librarians go and defend the library, they say, well, they're just protecting their jobs. It can be dismissed on at least one level. And what about community voices and engaging community voices, or the important role of our independent advisors and leaders in the trustee, in our trustee base?
Well, one of my main messages about the role of the library in the community is what I used to say about my role as CEO of the library was, my job is not to build a better library. My job is to help the community improve itself using the library as a tool. So building a better library is still important, but it's secondary to the main mission. And if I let that, I found that when, you know, believing that, when I'm out in the community and trying to help make a difference, because I'm there trying to help make a difference for what the community wants to do, not necessarily just for the best interests of the library, that really helped considerably with engaging. An example of an area that I think where I've had some positive result in Stratford was with the health community. I believe really strongly that. Well, I mean, I think we all know that health information is one of the most important areas of interest for just about every individual alive that's conscious. And that's one side of it. It's something that people really care about. And on the other side of it, from the corporate side, the governments are spending all kinds of money in healthcare, so if we want, and it's always among their top priorities. So if we want to be seen to be aligning with government priorities, we got to be seen to be involved in healthcare. So I consciously courted people in the health community, especially the local health unit, and I encourage all the libraries across the province to do that, to work closely with their health units. We share a mission in terms of delivering health information, maybe for subtly different purposes, but there's lots of areas of overlap where we can really help each other. And it takes a long time. You know, it was a matter of going to quite a few meetings and being there. And, you know, I was sort of conscious of the fact that for the first few meetings, people would look at me and wonder, what's he doing here?
Mm-hmm. You know? And so you find the connections where you look at, in Toronto, major push on for childhood immunization, and it's not a big leap to say we can provide space for those sessions on childhood information, on childhood immunization sessions, but while we're there, we can talk about parenting collections and health collections and see the connections, and people can make the connection when we're providing program space.
Yeah, space is an easy one, and it's because it's tangible. The more difficult ones are getting people to understand the capabilities of the library and to start to get a glimpse into that beast that you mentioned earlier called reference, the incredible knowledge skills that the library can bring to the community by being at when a question would get raised at a meeting, I would try from time to time to come back to the next meeting or bombard everybody with an email subsequently with material that's relevant to the question. And in time, they come to realize that it's hey, this person is a pretty good researcher. And I knew, I think this happened maybe twice. I knew that I was having success at what I was trying to do when somebody said, "Wow, that's amazing, Sam. How did you do all that?" And somebody else said, "Well, he's a librarian. What do you expect?"
Exactly. So if we take it into bringing community voices in, you're basically talking about, don't look at generic community voices, although you can bring your cardholder email lists and be able to communicate and bring people into programs, especially if you've done the permissioning system for it.
Yeah.
But what you're talking about is sitting there saying, we get stronger in order to influence and advocate when we have partnerships with critical components of our communities, like the health unit or the police or the firefighters or whatever.
Yeah, and that's where it's a matter of being strategic in determining what those are. And the strategy, like I said, has everything to do with what the community cares about.
Right, and you see that by conversing with political leaders or having your trustees do it.
Yeah, by the having trustees, friends of the library, foundations, having those people act as ambassadors out in the community means that they have to be nurtured and well informed, which can be a challenge. There's formal tools too, like the consultation component of strategic plans, need studies. I've always felt that there's a tendency when an organization like a library does a community consultation, there's too much of a tendency to go out and ask, what do you want the library to do, and what I think the question that should be asked is, what do you want? And then it's our job to figure out how the library can help. Because if you go out and ask people, what do you want the library to do, you fall into the old conundrum of people whose understanding of the library is limited by what they know.
And one thing I know you're good at, which I think is an important influencing leadership skill, is you've described a couple of formal conversational opportunities, focus groups, consultants, go out and get stuff, which is all fine. You need that structured conversation. But then there's the informal conversations about where you take the opportunity because you see a counselor in the grocery store, or you're at a cocktail party or a barbecue, or you've run a cocktail party. FOPL runs the odd cocktail party to bring senior civil servants in so that we have informal conversations with them that are properly two-way.
And a combination of the two, of the formal and the informal, is a movement that I'm just really pumped up about. I just love that the library world is doing this. And that's the community-led librarian initiative.
Mm-hmm.
The results of that study that was done a few years ago. The formalizing, to a certain extent, the responsibility of library staff to get out into the community and interact and exactly along those lines, supplementing it with the trustees and the friends is an excellent strategy, and I think somebody with a bit of creativity can probably take it beyond that. Like, why don't we get advocates online?
Mm-hmm. And you've just described the Libraries 2020 initiative that Vopal's hoping to lead next year. However, I want to shift the conversation a little bit to finance. It's my personal opinion that money is not the goal. Money is the measurement of whether you were successful at your strategies. Did you get the funding, and is it aligned with what your communities need, and are people happy with it? But my question, first off, is how to get through the noise that the civil servants, who are many of them are on our side, but they hear a lot of voices. Excuse me. Now, in a community such as the ones you've been in, you're also breaking through the noise, especially at budget time, of the police, the firefighters, the ambulances, parks and recreation, the sports teams, the cultural institutions. Like a plethora of voices are coming through. What strategies help you break through that noise so that your voice gets heard?
Well, I think there's two things come to mind, one of which is a negative, which is don't whine.
Yes, we heard that on Cheryl's call too. That was a big one.
and building up false dichotomies is really counterproductive. Like saying, going and saying, why are you, you shouldn't be giving so much money to the police. We do more to build social cohesion, and that helps create a safer community than putting guns in people's hands. But don't do that. That's like work with the police. And find ways that you can work together and Pictou Antigonish Regional Library in Nova Scotia. They did an amazing job with their local police getting an RCMP officer to be a champion for literacy. But that's not addressing your question. I think the way to cut through the noise is by being targeted and being clear. Like when you need money for a specific thing, explain. You got to have the explanation. It's got to be done in their language and tied into their priorities, etc. But the cutting through all of the noise and targeting the issues that are important to them is the only way to do it, I think.
Yeah, I think there's an issue of clarity. I find, in one of my favorite movies is Amadeus.
Yeah.
And one of the lines in that movie is one of his teachers and critics, Salieri, another less famous symphony writer, said about Salieri, too many notes, too many notes. And one of the things of the complexity of communicating the value of libraries is it's very complex. We have a very complex value proposition, and we use a lot of words to do it.
Yeah.
When you look at a firefighter, you think stop, drop, and roll. They've got it down. They train it from the youth, whatever. And I worry that sometimes we over-communicate, either too much text or too many words, and it becomes a morass. So when you talk about clarity, do you have any tips on how to be clear?
Well, I don't know how often I accomplish that myself. I really wonder, but in my mind it comes back to what we were talking about earlier: the listening and the active listening, watching the person, the group to whom you're speaking, and when you start to lose them, you're on the wrong track. And clarity isn't a matter of how you're saying it. It's a matter of how they're hearing it. And listening is so important. I think I'm not sure what else to say.
Well, I think there's some stuff around the role of visuals. Visuals can be clearer. Like when you look at some of the ways that people present their financial reports instead of using visual tools like bar charts and pie charts and growth. Or if you want to say you serve a diverse population, it can sound politically incorrect. But if you show a bunch of pictures, like in Toronto, you can take a picture of the Malvern branch and see it filled with young black men doing their homework. And you don't have to say anything. You say we are engaging and making a difference in our communities.
Yeah, and I agree. In GIS, for instance, using mapping to show demographic kind of influences and differences and outcomes, mm-hmm. et cetera, is really exciting. There's all the kind of potential, but it all boils down to who the audience is. If you're talking to a bunch of people who just got off work and you've got 5 minutes to get their attention and they're not really that they're not really open to visuals or mm-hmm. they don't like technology for some reason, don't use them. Listen to your audience, watch your audience.
Now, I'm hearing a lot of people saying that telling a story works better, especially for some of the people we need to influence. Politicians in particular tend to be auditory, intrapersonal learners and be very good at it.
Yeah.
And respecting the role of the politician as the agent of compromise in our society and priority setting is difficult for some of us because we're pushing our position, which is an important part too. So you weren't on the front lines. How did you build the story base to tell stories to your locality saying this is what we did in the library and it's not just about books?
Yeah, and it's a matter of listening to the staff and you know, getting, and that's where, actually, that's a good point, because that's where frontline staff can really make a difference, help make a difference in terms of passing on the stories so that they get passed along to the storytellers in the organization. Also getting individuals to use them. You can extract all kinds of information from survey tools like the counting opinions surveys, or from the open-ended questions, I think the Federation should consider doing it again. That competition that did several years ago with the Telling Our Stories competition.
Mm-hmm. We're making a different infrastructure for that, but it's in the plan.
Yeah, because there's nothing.